Hello, Mugendi. Hello.
Hi, you Pierre.
Hi. Hi. So, good afternoon. It's such a great pleasure to introduce our guest speaker, Professor Mugendi Muntua, good friend of us. He came to Turin many times in the last 15, 20 years. I have very good memories of your speech at the Changing the Change conference in 2008. During the Torino World Design Capital Year. Mugendi is a transdisciplinary industrial designer, educator, researcher, and consultant working at Machos University in Kenya. He's studied in several countries in Africa, in the United States of America, in India, and holds a bachelor degree in design, a master of science in industrial design, and a postgraduate diploma, this is really interesting, in higher education and training. He also a PhD in universal design. He is passionate about various expressions of socially conscious design, including design strategies for mitigating climate change, indigenous knowledge systems, IKS, development, and universal let's say universal inclusive design. Mugendi has a specific interest in pivotal role of design thinking in advancing the development agenda of the African continent. He is founding member of the Network of Africa Designers, Pan-African Design Institute, and Design Council of Africa, and is associated with a number of other international networks. I have to mention also his activity as advisory committee member of the International Center for Creativity and Sustainable Development under the auspices of UNESCO. Additionally, Mugendi is president emeritus and senator of the World Design Organization, having been the first African president in the history of this organization from 2015 until 2017. Much of his work with WDO focuses on the importance of supporting the aspiration of designers worldwide in solving wicked problems in. Well, the title of his lecture today is Design, Innovation and Technology for Sustainability, an African Perspective. Mugendi, please take the floor.
Thanks, Pierre, and greetings to all my friends in Torino and also within the WDO. I know a number of present and past board members are online, so greetings to you all. It's a great pleasure indeed. I've been to Torino a couple of times. I believe the first time was in 2008 at the Changing the Change conference with Ezio Manzini here and many others who are also present. So I'll take you through what's going on, at least from our perspective, with design, innovation, and technology for sustainability from the context of Africa. So very quickly, there are three Africas. The one we see every day and not who sees it. The one they write about, that is those that are outside of the continent. And the real magical Africa we don't see unfolding through all the difficulties of our time, like a quiet miracle. Now, when you look at the way Ben Okri, who's a Nigerian philosopher, poet, phrases it, he's trying to remind us that there are many perspectives to any story, and Africa is not different. But there's this emerging co-created narrative of Africa, which is being co-created by Africans themselves. In fact, to quote Chinua Achebe, until lions have their own historian, tales of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. Now, that means that those of us who know the story of the lion must tell it. And you'll notice that Africa there is with a K, and that is deliberate because it's a way in which Africans on the continent are looking at this narrative. And it's different from Africa with the sea. So if you put it differently, Africa with the sea is how the rest of the world sees Africa. And that is from outside looking in, and Africa with a K is how Africa sees itself from the inside looking out, and that's the story we'd like to share with friends across the world. So Africa has many writing systems, contrary to what people might think. Of course, these ones I've given here pictograms, but also a lot of them have to do with the symbolism. So I'll be speaking about symbolism even in design, innovation, and technology. So you would note from the Adinkra symbols at the top there, on the top left from Ghana, as well as the Nigerian writing system known as CBD. And then, of course, the Bantu systems that are found in Southern Africa. And you can see examples of those symbols. Some are quite literal. Like if you look at the one for eat, you can see that is definitely a mouth with some teeth that is about to eat something in the bottom right-hand corner. These are other symbols from the Adinkra symbols of Ghana. I'll be referencing some of them in my presentation just to give you some insight. For example, this is a symbol of democracy. It's two crocodiles, or rather known as Siamese crocodiles, that share the same tummy but have different legs. They have different forms of that. It's also a sense in which communities operate in Africa. So the reason I'm saying this is because of the important participation of participants in design or co-design. It's a natural people that happen because we have, from time immemorial, come together to support one another, to do things. And so that sense of community is still very strong, whether it's in the forums that people use for communal dialogue, or whether it's in systems of collective self-reliance and mutual assistance, or even collective efficiency, like working together to make work much more efficient. Additionally, you may have heard of Ubuntu, and Ubuntu is quite an all-encompassing philosophy in that sense, but it places human beings at the center of this discourse. So Ubuntu means person, and you find that it touches on things, on places, on phenomena, and of course on people. I'll not get into too much detail, but I'll summarize it in the next slide, that if you look at Ubuntu in a nutshell, I am because we are. That one I think you know because of Mandela. But for me as a designer, I also say that I participate, therefore I am. Not enough to be. Being can be passive, but participation is active. And finally, we co-design together, and therefore we can transform. We can transform life, we can transform reality, we can engage with wicked problems to solve all kinds of problems. So the first sub-theme I'm looking at is leadership. That symbol there from the Adinkra symbols of Ghana means charisma or leadership. And if you look at the world as 100 people, which helps us to remember that we are a human family, we are one community as much as we come from different places, you'll find that there are different aspects, whether it's in issues like how many of us have water, how many of us have education at college level, how many of us have decent housing and shelter, and so on. So that pictogram, that infographic, kind of reminds us that we are all human. And as we speak, because of COVID-19, that realization has come very dramatically to remind us that none of us is separate from the human race. That what happens in one part of the world is important to us because it will catch up with us eventually. In fact, Ghanaians have a very nice proverb, which may be a bit biased towards the masculine gender, but it essentially says that if you notice your neighbor's beard on fire, you better keep some water next to yours. And we've seen what has happened with the COVID-19. When one nation got COVID, it started to come across the borders, and eventually the whole world was brought to a standstill. So this reminds us very much of this reality. Additionally, the World Design Organization, which Pierre and myself and others are part of, we believe that we can be part of the solution, that we can make life better through design for everyone. So again, the size of Africa is often misunderstood. I've often been asked by people not in Italy, fortunately, and other parts of the world, like if I would have, I know someone who's in Lagos. Now, Lagos is in West Africa, which is in Nigeria, and I'm from Nairobi, Kenya, which is on the east side. So if you look at that map right there, Lagos is where Texas is in the southern part of the U.S., and I'm in Nairobi, which is towards the middle of India, which is on the right-hand side there. So it's a massive continent, and we need to remember that when we speak about design or innovation and technology, because the vast place, I've often told people, is 1.3 billion people, the same population as India, even though the landmass is much bigger, and 55 different countries. We have major languages like French and English and Arabic and Portuguese and Swahili, and we have over 2,200 languages. It's a big place where we celebrate diversity as a standard way of engaging. So again, we need to learn from the past. So when you speak about indigenous knowledge, it means we respect knowledge that was co-created by those who came before us. It means we are humble in our admission. When we look at the COVID-19, for example, we see references to the Spanish flu, we see the Black Plague. So we shouldn't think that just because we're in the 21st century, that those who came before us have nothing to teach us. That would be arrogant and actually are so foolhardy. So we need to start to engage with knowledge that has been created by people who've lived before us and which has been tried and tested and proven to be valid even today. So,
for example, because part of my conversation with you today is going to reference slow food, which obviously has correlations with slow design. This is food from Morocco. You can see from the lady who's preparing it, the beautiful artifacts that are used to prepare the food, as well as the furniture and the setting and her costume. So it's a holistic presentation. Food is one aspect of material culture that is quite rich. And this lady in Morocco is an example. My friend Hisham Lalou has treated me many times to this beautiful cuisine. We also have food from Ethiopia. Many of you have tried it. It's actually very nice, like kitfo and injera, which I'm sure you've tasted. You can also see the tray, which is a traditionally woven tray that is holding the food, and it's eaten collectively. And these are other examples of food from the continent. But what I'd like you to see is that the artifacts for presenting the food are just as important as the food itself. And traditionally, people eat together around a circle, so they share the food because it's a communal thing. Then the symbol of beauty is something I'd like us to celebrate. As designers, we need to remember that aesthetics should never be compromised at the altar of functionality. In this case, the African comb is the symbol that the Adinkra symbol adopts for beauty. What I need to remind you is, in Africa, beauty is not gender specific. We have, in this case, two women from Debele, which is in South Africa, with their beautiful blankets and their beautiful patterns on their buildings behind them. We also have men also, like these ones are from northern Nigeria, from a place among the Fulani people, where these nomadic men, the ones right around the slide, they actually compete. They're called the Wodabe. Every year, I know this year has been disrupted because of COVID, but every year they hold a beauty pageant where the women are the judges and the men are the participants. And these men, as you can see, are accentuating their beauty, and their teeth, of course, are a big part of that. And then at the bottom, where you see five men standing, the one in the middle is known as Laduma. He's a fashion and textile designer, and he created this range of woven knitwear inspired by his other people of Southern Africa, where when the young men are initiated into manhood, they need new clothes, and so that inspired him. And the beadwork from his community inspired those beautiful pieces of work. He's actually presented this work in Milan as well, in New York, Tokyo, and even London, and many other places. These are women from Namibia who've been inspired by cattle. You can see the ones on the right-hand side, they've got something that looks like horns, which is inspired by the cattle that they keep. And the ones on the left, they use the ghee, which is the fat from the cattle, to make a paste which they put on their hair and on their faces, which also acts as a kind of a repellent against insects. You can see in this case, these are weddings from across the continent. And people in Africa don't need to be invited to weddings. As soon as they hear there's an event, they participate. So Africans are good at celebrating that. I'm sure those of you who visited Africa will wonder what happens, because every day is like a riot as long as there's a festivity. Creativity, of course, this is based on the spider's web, is another of the attributes that we have on the continent, and that deals with innovation. Without creativity, we cannot innovate. Design, of course, relies a lot on creativity and technology as well. So these are the meanings of different fabrics from the Ghanaian called the kente cloth, and the symbolism there, like the gold, is actually literally gold, which is a symbol for wealth, and many other colors which are there. These are braided hair from the Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo. And what's interesting, there's a beautiful TED Talk and as well as a book by a gentleman known as Ron Eglash, who's an ethnomathematics specialist. And he's also a computer scientist at Boot. And he studied the hairstyles of these women of Congo and discovered the fractal geometry that was found in this beautiful braided work. I spoke with Ron the other day, and I was delighted to see that he's still passionate about these fractals from Africa. And that image there, you can see the plotted graph of the actual hair in terms of the fractal and the geometry. And then on the right, you can see how it has been applied on this lovely lady's head. These are different patterns of baskets from Botswana, and they have different meanings from the environment and animals, and even from the artifacts that they associate with them. And then they translate that into these beautiful baskets that you can see and winnowing trays. Again, there is this lady who's one of my heroes from Africa. Her name is Esther Mahlangu. And Esther is 85 years old. She turned 85 on the 11th of November. And she's been, for the last 70 years, a traditional artist in the Bele in South Africa, and promoting the work of her community, and also teaching young people how to do these beautiful patterns. She's also done a vehicle here. I put that in just for you if you're in Torino. And I know Fiat and Torino have a long history. And she did this art vehicle in 2007. So her work is highly appreciated. She's also done the tale of British Airways. She's done a Rolls-Royce interior, BMW exterior. So she's quite well known, and she's one of my heroes as a champion of African traditional design. Adaptability is also an important attribute. That is meant to be a crocodile, although it might look very healthy there. It just means that you need to be able to work in different environments with different professionals. And in this case, a crocodile can live comfortably on water or also on land, and so it's adaptable in that sense. These buildings have been done using sandbags. I'll just pass quickly for you to see, in Southern Africa. Another example would be mutual support, which is the way people support each other. I spoke about that at the beginning, and why community is important. And these are people building houses in South Africa and Cape Town together using their own talent in collaboration with the government. Those are women who form what we call stock belts or cooperatives, where they work together, support each other. And those are women from Botswana weaving those beautiful baskets I showed you just a bit ago around the symbolism. And these are dugout canoes in Mozambique, where people work together and fish together, just to show you that this is an important sense of the community. Then another attribute is quality of the highest order. So this is important because for a long time, African design was considered like curios, which was targeting tourists, and it was not particularly of very high quality. And at that time, we were concerned that this was not reflecting the best of our work. And hopefully now, we start to see better quality, like the kente cloth you see there, or those beautiful trays or lights or bags that people are creating. And I'll just speak about one example, which I think would be of interest to you. This is a hearse, which is for carrying coffins of the dear departed, again in Ghana, in Accra. And in Africa, we celebrate every rite of passage, from birth to becoming a young adult, to marriage, to childbearing, and even ultimately to death. So death is the ultimate celebration. And this is the rite of passage I want to focus on. So these are known as fantasy coffins. Some of you may be familiar with them. And the idea is that the person is buried in a coffin that reflects their attributes or what the person was known for. So in this example, you see a chicken there. That would have been a chicken farmer's coffin, or the fish on the left, or the lobster on the right, if you're a deep sea fisherman. The vehicle there is for businessmen, that's a Mercedes-Benz. You can also see a shoe if you're a runner. An eagle is a politician. A cocoa bean is a cocoa bean farmer. A lion is a very powerful chief or political figure. And even an aircraft if you're a frequent flyer, like some of us. And as well as a Coca-Cola bottle, if you're a distributor of Coke or a big fan of the drink. This gentleman obviously is not from Africa, because in Africa people have taboos about their own death. So this gentleman, who's a videographer, is doing a user test of his own coffee. So that I find very interesting. So it's gone global now. Everyone knows about the fantasy coffee from Ghana, and they've reached a level of quality that we can appreciate. Then ingenuity. This is based on a board game, which is played, called Dane Dane by Ghanaians. It is good to know that sometimes as designers, we design for one environment use, but then the product we design for use is often misused, and unfortunately, in some instances, abused. This is a bicycle in Uganda, which obviously was not designed for that. So this is a design
Mugendi, sorry.
Yes?
Could you speak louder? Thank you.
Okay, my apologies to everyone. I think I had a technical glitch there. Yeah, okay. So this gentleman is a self-taught designer. He's actually a teacher in Western Kenya who learned how to motorize those bicycles. So he puts motors on a bicycle on his own. Those are men in Uganda abusing this motorbike because it's not designed for three people. But that's a reality there. This is a person in the rural parts of Botswana, and you can see what happens when people use hybrid solutions to come up with kind of solutions that work for them. And then the other issue which we need to look at is sustainability, which is obviously part of our title for today's lecture. We did some work with the Politecnico di Milano in coming up with sustainable solutions, which you may have heard of, called the MULO. And then we also tried to bring in the context, like in this case, you can see a Zulu man who's trying to use a rickshaw, which originally came from India in the 1900s. And we are countering that with cultural and yet modern solutions that work about sustainability. And so this is a newer version of that rickshaw in Durban, in South Africa. Also, Cape Town was the site where the first fully electric vehicle was designed in Africa, and this was known as the Jewel. And since then, Uganda also produced an electric vehicle, this one you can see here. And if you, what's also interesting is that Uganda has also introduced an electric bus, which they're testing in Kampala as we speak. This is an award-winning charging station, which is basically attached to the rear wheel of a vehicle. It won a Red Dot award for this particular product. And the idea is that it can use any bicycle wheel to charge, and it can be used to power up laptops and mobile phones using kinetic energy. So the other thing we need to do is then think about understanding. We need to build understanding, in this case, a project that was looking at how people in Rwanda were struggling with adequate lighting because they had poor kerosene-powered lamps, which were not particularly safe. And this is a piloting and prototyping stage, which was done by one of our students. And this was the system that was being tested with children. And this is a modular system that was being used to use different sources of energy, from solar to kinetic and even the mains. So ultimately, what then one wants to see is transformation, to transform the lives of people on the continent, as well as to transform the situations that we find ourselves in by improving people's quality of life. So to that end, this is how Africa looks. In terms of the population distribution, you can see it's mainly around the coastal regions. And at the same time, we have a huge challenge around housing, So that particular infographic there gives you an idea. The dark red is the number of people who live in informal housing. So there's a big need where you have places like Sudan with almost 90% of people living in informal housing, whereas in South Africa it's much lower. Africa is also growing because of investments. Africa is also moving on because of the different ways in which the ease of doing business in Africa is coming through. If you remember from Ezio Manzini's idea of the leapfrog hypothesis, we believe that Africa could pass some of those not very sustainable ways of living to moving straight into the third step there, where we can actually use the best technologies from social media and the internet to stay connected and remain sustainable. So examples of this leapfrogging is the M-Pesa mobile money that has been developed in Kenya, which does not require any formal banking and no middlemen. It's just simply ways of sending money. It's now a model in other parts of the world. Recently, Kenya did some crowdsourcing for shoes. All of you know that Kenyans are very good at marathon running, but we never had our own shoes. We always used other people's shoes. And this local company in Kenya has actually now gone into production. Enda in Swahili means to move or to go. Then two young men, one in Ghana and one in Nairobi, started something called Leti Arts, where they're developing games and video content on the heroes of Africa. That was even before the Black Panther movie, which was quite a phenomena. This is a robotics network based in Accra, but it's actually the African Robotics Network, which is helping develop low-cost robotics and artificial intelligence and machine learning solutions for the continent. Africa also was, in Kigali, Rwanda specifically, was the site of the first drone port in the world, where the drones are being used to deliver critical medicines, blood for transfusion, and other essential payloads within the country. In fact, from this particular drone port in Kigali, it takes about 17 minutes to fly to any part of the country and deliver the necessary goods. In fact, if you know the terrain of Kigali, you'd realize that this is a very cost-effective solution. So this is another example of leapfrogging, where you're using 21st century solutions for sometimes even 19th century problems. So I'm now wrapping up my presentation. Just to conclude, I just wanted to suggest that things are getting better on the continent. Design has been a very big part because we have a number of networks and platforms that are running. The World Design Organization has also invested quite a bit in the continent, and that's something I'm grateful for. And so as we move on, we look at how we can build resilience, and I'll just show you very quickly a few examples. This is known as the bark cloth, which grows on a tree, basically stripping the bark of the tree and then using it to make products. And these are some of the products that are made from that bark cloth, which is totally sustainable because it regenerates every few years on the bark. We have also solutions which are for vertical gardens, even in slum or informal settlements and shelters. You can see that particular example in South Africa in Cape Town. Then interdependence, which is people living together. And in this case, I just wanted to remind us, whereas Torino was the first World Design Capital in 2008, Cape Town was the World Design Capital in 2014. And the focus then was on transformation of people's lives using design as a catalyst. This year it's Lille in France, which is the World Design Capital. And then emancipation. This is important because coming out of a post-colonial discourse, a lot of Africa is discovering or rediscovering itself. And so the idea of emancipation goes beyond empowerment, because it's about freeing people so that they can chart their own destinies, so they can also determine their own path. And we look at how Africa is using resources, how easy it is to do business in Africa, and those kind of issues obviously impact on the entrepreneurial spirit of the continent. And then finally, conviviality. This is the ability for people to live in peace and harmony together. And this is something that is very important as we move into the future, because no matter how technologically advanced humanity becomes, we will still need to live in peace with one another. And this is something that we in Africa are particularly familiar with because of the reality that I had shared with you earlier. So you can see in this case, these young people sitting around together and just basically sharing life. And this is quite common in some of the rural parts of the continent. So to conclude, I just wanted to suggest that there's about four things I'd like to share with you in conclusion. One is, whereas STEM has been particularly well-known, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, there's a market shift. So now there's a determined shift to move towards STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, art and design, and mathematics. So the art and design, which is the A, is becoming more important. And when you listen to what the World Economic Forum says about the attributes or characteristics or qualities required for the 21st century, creativity and problem solving are part of that kind of a skill set. Secondly, there's a growth of design associations across the continent. Presently, we have the Open Design Festival based in Cape Town, as well as the Pan-African Design Institute, which is a virtual platform that is actually, the membership is from every part of the continent. So it's brought the Francophone or French-speaking Africa and Anglophone, English-speaking Africa, and all these other groupings together into one platform. Then what we've also observed is the slow food movement in Africa has been focusing on the youth. That's the first thing, which is very good because that speaks to sustainability. But also it's looking at sustainable production and consumption of indigenous food. So this is good because some of the foods which grew traditionally and were consumed traditionally actually were extremely useful, but then they were supplanted by the new varieties because of the ease of production and the ease of distribution. So by coming up with indigenous foods that can be used and grown locally, it reduces the carbon footprint, but also creates employment for young people, as well as speaks to the nutritious and health living of the people who consume it. And then finally, innovation and technology adoption is growing at an exponential rate. And the two areas I'd like to speak to are the mobile telephony, where all kinds of apps are being developed by young people, particularly in places like Nairobi and Cape Town and Cairo and Accra and Lagos, and even in Casablanca. So those places are seeing very exciting developments coming up around app development and solving real problems, not just for entertainment. And then also the focus on renewable energy. You saw the size of our continent, it's massive. So by coming up with distributed renewable energy solutions, we are quickly electrifying parts of the continent that would have taken far longer to join the mainstream in terms of development. And ultimately, we all subscribe to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, and that helps us to stay focused and connected to the rest of the world. So with those few remarks, I just wanted to say thank you very much. And as we think about the COVID-19, as we exit from it, hopefully in the next few months, let's stay safe, let's stay healthy, and let's stay connected. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mugendi.
Thank you.
Very, very interesting, very inspiring speech. I think that your lecture is very useful also for our students who are attending this conference. So you address very important topics. Let's say that most of the Italian designers and most of European designers are not aware of most of the issues you brought to the discussion. Unfortunately, we lost some of some parts of your speech. Anyway, I'm sure that there are some questions. So any reactions from the audience? Well, wait a second. Okay, I'm here in the chat. Yes, there is a question. Buonasera, Professor Mugendi. She wrote in Italian and English, Alessandra Savina. So, good afternoon, Professor Mugendi. Is there a relationship between design, food, and technology in Africa, for example, to tackle malnutrition by default?
Yes. In fact, as I mentioned just now, yes. That connection between food security, food production, health and nutrition is very strong. There's a lot of direction right now around securing food production. In fact, during this COVID-19, one of the things we realized was the biggest challenge was how to keep food flowing to the different communities. So you might know that Kenya has been famous for being one of the leading producers of horticultural products, but now the focus has been on durable foods and cereals, foods that have long shelf life and high energy and high nutritional value. So the slow food movement is a big part of that, and it's very active. As you know, it started off in Italy, and it came to Kenya, and it's very strong in Kenya in that sense.
Very good. Okay. Are there any other questions from the audience? Well, maybe it's possible, no? So just a comment, okay. Well, in the meantime, maybe I can ask you how, because most of your work is directly connected to people. I mean, you work with people and many activities connected to co-design, social design. So my question is how to evaluate the contribution of the contribution coming from the people. So this is one of the key points. Every time we work with for instance, citizens or people that are not really experts. So how do we evaluate?
Yeah, that's a good question, because many of the people that we work with are not even familiar with the professional contribution that designers make. And so part of the exercise is initially to train people in design thinking and other human-centered design tools, particularly around co-design or participatory design. And so typically the way we measure success, the way we monitor or evaluate success is one in buy-in, how many people have joined the project. Then you also measure the before, during, and after, like what was the problem, how is it being addressed, and what success have you had? And then there's always a follow-up, because as a designer, if you're involved with community members, you cannot just, it's not like the corporate sector where you leave and then leave them to their own devices. With a community, you need to follow through maybe 3 or 6 months or even a year later to see whether the projects that were conceived or co-created or co-designed are actually still going on. And then you can bring in some more design impulses and catalysts so that the project keeps going. And then also to create networks. And this is why DESIS is a good platform and many others.
Sure.
Where you can share best practices and experiences.
Thank you very much. So there are several questions. The first one is from Gabriella. How design and innovation could guarantee save tradition, millennial tradition, African millennial tradition? So how design and innovation could guarantee the history and of traditional African culture?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Gabriella, because part of the exercises we're doing in participation with the museums in different parts of the continent is to document and archive the living knowledge that we have. I showed an example of the traditional Ndebele artist, the one who's 85 years old, and she's running a school, and there's a lot of universities that are working with her to document those processes for the future, for posterity. So capturing that, archiving it, and also digitizing it so that it's available on a digital platform has been a big exercise. The National Museums of Kenya is one of the museums that has done this. So it's possible now to find artifacts that have been scanned using three-dimensional scanners and other technologies to make sure that this rich heritage is not lost. So it's part of our training, the teaching of young designers, is to take them through indigenous knowledge systems and also to invite knowledge experts like the lady I showed you to come and also speak to these young people and share with them. So we have to take the classroom outside of the universities into the communities and bring community members who are experts in indigenous knowledge and heritage also into the universities to share with us.
Thank you. There is another question from Matt. Good evening. I heard China is investing a great amount of money in Africa. Is this true? If yes, on what are they investing mostly on?
Okay, that's an interesting geopolitical question. The truth of the matter is that China now has overtaken Western Europe and the US as the biggest bilateral donor agency in Africa. Most of the infrastructure is around what they call the One Belt and Road initiative. And Kenya happens to be part of it, and a few other countries have benefited. So most of the investments are in the form of infrastructure, because much of Africa has very poor infrastructure. I think I talked about electricity and other, you know, and food production. Those are two critical ones. So a lot of those investments you find have built roads and bridges and railway lines and ports for ships, as well as irrigation schemes, dams for irrigation and also for hydroelectric power production. So those are the main directions, as well as, of course, because Africa has a lot of natural raw materials. So a lot of infrastructure also facilitates Africa also exporting its resources so that it can also gain some forex from those activities.
Okay, thank you. There is another question from Sara Comino. Is it true that isolated communities are recycling objects and that they adopt sustainable solutions, such as the use of energy, solar power, rechargeable? This is the question. And do they exist also in big cities? This is a question. I don't know if you get the meaning.
Yes. Okay. There's a lot of recycling of resources that you can say is what we call trash to cash, where a lot of the trashed materials, particularly electronic and plastic and other products, are recycled. In fact, Ghana in Accra has the biggest e-waste processing plant. It's not even a proper plant, but it's young people mainly doing informal recycling going on. So you find it in all the major cities, and it's quite an active kind of activity. But what we need now to do as educators on the continent is to move into some more of upcycling, so that it's not just recycling something that has been trashed, but to find ways to take something that could still be added value. And then that becomes a much more profitable activity for these people who deal with the recycling of materials.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mugendi. Okay. I don't think there are any other questions. The lecture was really, really great. Thank you indeed, Professor Mugendi, for your time, first of all. It was a great pleasure having you here, even only digitally, at the Politecnico di Torino, at the Biennale Tecnologia. So, maybe there is another question. Wait a second. Yes, there is another one.
Okay.
Okay, the last one. Micro grids, easy access to electrical power. How can these teams be introduced while at the same time preserving traditions and keeping in mind the importance of collectivity? How energy is perceiving in Africa?
I think that's a very good point. Maybe, yeah, sorry. I was just going to say that part of the challenge with the centralized electricity grids is they end up destroying a lot of environmental beauty. If you come to Africa, you'll find there's lots of space, and a lot of rural areas are still beautiful because they have not been overly industrialized. So part of the task for us is to bring the distributed renewable energies, which means that the energy is located, needs to be used. And we are relying quite a bit on mainly solar, because that is something that is used regularly. And in places like in Kenya, there's geothermal, which is steam coming from the earth. But the traditional ways of life are being preserved through different ways in which the community members are encouraged to preserve. So every county, let me give an example of Kenya. We have 47 counties, which are different administrative blocks. And each of them have heritage and cultural departments that look to make sure that we don't lose the culture in the process of becoming modern. So when we're using that Ezio Manzini's leapfrogging hypothesis, it means we are leapfrogging technologically, but culturally we are retaining what is useful. Remember, culture is dynamic. So what is useful we keep, but what is not helping us we can put aside. But we are trying to balance, and this is maybe a challenge. I have to admit to that particular person who asked the question, it's a very good question. It's a challenge not to lose the tradition as we try to become modern. So the balance has to be brought through design interventions and through offices of culture and heritage, which also become good custodians of those traditions without holding people back from developing industrially.
Okay. Thank you very much, Professor. It was great pleasure having you here. Thank you all for attending this conference. So see you in, I hope, in a very short time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And I hope to see you soon. Bye. Ciao. Bye.
Thank you.